You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where unlike California, we don't need a fake news advisory committee because we have our individual brains. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski, and if you're in California right now, like I am, join us Tuesday night at 8 p.m. for the first ever Midside Meetup. That'll be in the lobby of the hotel that Ocon is at. For those of you who aren't at Ocon, that's the Marriott at Fashion Island. So anyone in California, come on down to the Marriott at Fashion Island at 8 p.m. on Tuesday, July 3rd for the first ever Midside Meetup. Joining us this trip, but not for the Midside Meetup, because he is in our nation's capital, Daniel C. Richards.
Is Fashion Island where Gucci was born?
I don't know how to riff off of that. I'm sorry. I mean, it's clever, but I have nothing
to
say.
It's not that clever. It's not that clever. I couldn't think of a better joke. I thought of like Easter Island, but with stonewashed jeans.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking of something like the Island of Misfit Toys from that old stop motion animation where they had Baby New Year. So we're all on the same page here.
That's right.
They
that
do
page is terrible jokes.
You may have heard this when you lived out here, but you'll appreciate it anyway. People out here like to call it Fascist Island, and I'm sure that has something to do with capitalism.
Is it the one island that doesn't vote straight Democratic Party, or
probably because California, Orange County is more red than anywhere else in the state, I believe.
Gotcha.
Also joining us, and he will be traffic permitting, and you always have to say traffic permitting in California. He will be at the Midside Meetup, and he always foregoes his gay white male privilege by identifying as a woman, William Green.
Hello. Yeah, I've been getting back into rock climbing, going to the climbing gym. Really excited about the Independence Day holiday. I'm going to get to go a couple times this week. So very exciting. Trying to get back into my beach bod shape just in time for summer.
Is there something at the top of the rock wall? Is that why you climb it? Like, is there delicious cheese
just my
at the top or something?
It's just my pride at the top.
Rainbow pride cookie at the top. Gotcha. Understood.
Isn't Pride Month over? Are you allowed to say the word pride anymore, William?
Oh, maybe not. Man. Well, but I
now
couldn't celebrate Pride because I gave up my gay privilege. So when's the fascist Pride? What month is that?
I think that was during the 40s, right? When Hitler was taking over Europe.
You missed it by a few months. Dang. A few months and a couple decades.
All right. Well, when we're talking about things we can and we can't say and, you know, ignorant statements like we just made, that's pretty relevant to a lot of the news stories this week. There's a lot about censorship and the press and what should and shouldn't be said. So that's a really good segue to head into the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. Isn't just a fad.
Tragedy meets farce in our first story. We, of course, have to lead off with the attack on the Capitol, which is a newspaper in Annapolis, not all that far away from where I live. A little scary. Five journalists were shot dead by a crazy guy who was essentially angry over the fact that the paper, quote-unquote, defamed him by writing about an actual accusation made against him that was not defamatory at all because it was indeed truthful. There have been people going back and forth this week deciding if Donald Trump is solely to blame for the shooting or only partly to blame for the shooting. And this article, I think, lands on the side that he's not to blame, but in fact might be to blame, but isn't to blame, but might be to blame. I'll let you decide. This is a story called Trump's Press Attacks Didn't Cause the Annapolis Tragedy, but there is a connection. So it starts like this. Some people will get it. Some people never will. One of those who gets it was the security guard in Denver who stopped Denver Post reporter Noelle Phillips on her way out of the building Thursday to say how upset he was about the massacre of journalists at the Capital Gazette newspaper in Annapolis. If you attack the press, he told her, you attack our democracy. One of those who will never is the President of the United States, who reacted to the journalistic disaster with a tepid thoughts and prayers tweet, along with a thumbs up sign and a dismissive wave to reporters asking for his comments. He just kept walking, and his body language announced, I don't give a damn. Trump has the loudest body language ever, by the way. It seems to announce a whole bunch. He should really get that in check.
He's like an Ayn Rand character where they can like communicate complex thoughts by just looking at each other.
That's right. That's why Melania, I think, felt compelled to wear a I don't care jacket so that her body wouldn't announce things without her permission. On Friday, Trump offered a statement on the killing saying, quote, this attack shocked the conscience of our nation and filled our hearts with grief. Journalists, like all Americans, should be free from the fear of being violently attacked while doing their job, end quote. Which, to be fair, is one of the bigger non-content statements one can make. Journalists, like all Americans, should be free from the fear of being violently attacked. Thanks, Trump. So, Justin, is Trump 100% to blame or 150% to blame for the shootings in Annapolis?
Well, when you say that, to even ask that question makes me want to ask you a question. And I'm thinking you might know this because you know obscure random things sometimes.
Oh, God.
What is the bump in the hit rate of a website simply by mentioning or typing the word Trump?
Oh. At this point, it's become negligible because it's all Trump all the time. But you could see a significant bump in your ratings or in your web hits by writing about the Trumpster, but no longer, as we are in the era of 24-hour Trump coverage. So,
right, and that's
all evened out.
That's what it seems to be. It seems to be that people assume that the only way you can write about something and get people interested nowadays is because you're writing about Donald Trump. There are so many things about this story that are important and necessary to talk about. But instead, this author somehow makes it about Trump. I mean, I love how you're skewering it because it's so absurd to be like, oh, well, Trump didn't cause this, but basically what Trump thinks is exactly what this guy thought. So now we're saying the president of the United States is the same as this guy who's mentally unhinged to go into a place of business and shoot five people, murder them in cold blood. We've really equivocated that between the president of the United States and this guy. And that's because this person thinks that they're smarter than they are. They think that nobody is going to understand what they're doing here. They're going to understand the techniques. They really think if they go, oh, well, Trump didn't cause this, and then they subtly say Trump caused it, that people will swallow that without realizing it. I mean, I think this leads into the last story as well about, you know, what the audience has the right to hear or not, or what deserves airtime, basically.
Spoiler alert with the news here.
I like to integrate everything, okay?
Stop it. We don't do integration here. Total disintegration. Okay, the article goes on to say, I want to be very clear. There is no reason to think that Trump's unceasing attacks on journalists had anything directly to do with Thursday's terrible killing of five staffers at the Capital Gazette. That's an amazing paragraph, by the way, in terms of psychology and writing, because you have a couple things going on. There is no reason to think that Trump's unceasing attacks, interesting word choice there, on journalists had anything directly to do with Thursday's terrible killing of five staffers at the Capital Gazette. That is a sentence designed to make you come away thinking that Trump had something to do with the shooting at the Capital Gazette. I want to be very clear about the writing there, which is, she's an incredible writer, at least in that regard. It continues, quote, those who suggested that, including a Reuters editor who later apologized for impulsively saying that blood is on your hands, Mr. President, were simply wrong. There's a rhetorical figure, by the way, whose name I can't remember off the top of my head because it's something in Greek or Latin. but it's basically saying without saying, and it goes something like this. I'm above this partisan bickering. I would never, for instance, point out that my political opponent is a heroin addict who likes hookers. I'm just going to stay out of that conversation entirely. And thus, you've said it and taken the high ground simultaneously.
Well, it's
that's
the equivalent,
this entire article,
Daniel,
in a nutshell.
It's the equivalent of hanging a lampshade on something.
Yeah. It's not quite a lantern. Right.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought it was hanging a lantern, but I like the lampshade. That works for me, too.
It's either or. So, it's lampshade if you're starring in Animal House.
Gotcha. This is what I want to ask William. William, I don't particularly care for Trump's, what does she call it, unceasing attacks on the media. Mostly because I don't think Trump should be tweeting, and I think he doesn't give any respect to the office of the presidency whatsoever. But, you know, it should go without saying, but I have to say it because of the culture we live in, no one should be killed by a gunman. That being said, and a completely unrelated point, as far as I'm concerned, hasn't the media done something to attract these quote-unquote attacks from Trump? And doesn't the media deserve at least a little bit of the criticism, or you know, if not in kind, in quantity, the criticism that the Trump administration is giving it?
I think you're right. It's hard because the media constantly tries to make themselves out to be more important than they are.
Yes.
You know, this whole fourth branch of government thing, this sort of self-important arrogance that they're the decider of truth. And people who tell the news like that are losing in the marketplace right now. You see a lot more rise of, on the bad side, this sort of like cheerleading sort of muckraker journalism, which we've seen before in history. A lot of people are like thinking this partisan journalism is a new thing, that like we actually had a lull for a while and now we have that coming back. But you also have people who actually in the market pride themselves on being neutral or objective. Like they tell you their part of the news, or they tell you the news and then they tell you what they think about it. You know, this whole like, hey, here are the facts that we know. Here's my reaction to it. And you see that those are some of the more popular news sources, especially online these days. So, yeah, I think the press can be criticized. The press should be criticized. And this, I think some of this, I might be accused of channeling Ann Coulter here or William F. Buckley, but some of this is on the press in the sense that for we've seen this shift. We had that story a couple of weeks ago about how the ACLU is no longer going to defend free speech. There's this conflation of words versus actions, and you can see it in that unceasing attacks quote. Like, the president was not shooting journalists. He was not punching them. He wasn't even slapping them. He was saying mean things on the internet to the press.
Yes.
And we don't see the difference here. We're constantly cheerleading Antifa when they say punch a Nazi, or when they go to protest like they did in Portland this weekend and just start punching people and say, well, they were saying mean things, and that's violence. This conflation of words with actions, with physical force, is what is the root of the problem that we see right now. And this story is talking in that vein. Like, it's talking about that, which is something that should be talked about, instead of just saying, hey, a mentally, like, the facts of this story are, a mentally deranged individual took a gun and shot people. It's not even, not again, channeling Ann Coulter here, I'm not trying to be callous, it's not even that big of a story. It's a big story in the sense of people died, and the story should be about that. And I think even the paper themselves have done a great job of telling the stories of the victims and not trying to be part of this Trump derangement syndrome story, or this larger story about conflating words and violence. But why do we have to make this about that?
Yeah. So, okay, there's one bit here, Justin. She says at the end, granted, journalists are far from perfect. We make mistakes and often pay dearly for them in harm to our jobs or our reputations. We can be unfair or show poor judgment. We certainly can be arrogant, but we try to get it right and usually do. Here's my problem with that. According to whom? By what standard? A standard of objectivity that doesn't exist anymore? Because that's completely wrong. By the standard of you are the resistance, then yes, you do quote unquote usually get it right. I work in an organization that right now is in the news a lot, and it's basically constant. I still don't want to say outright. You probably already know. It's not hard to find out. But the point is, it is not as if I'm watching this stream of tweets from media outlets, quote unquote journalists, especially at top ranking news outlets, and I see the occasional mistake, for instance. There is almost no report that goes out from the media about our organization that does not contain a factual error. To say it in the positive, about, I would say, greater than 80% of the stories actually have significant factual errors in them, from the micro level to the macro level, from the most minute detail thing to the most macro thing about our organization. It is wrong, the press is, constantly. Constantly. And you won't actually know how wrong the press is until they write about something you know about deeply, or the place where you work and understand what's actually going on. Once that happens, you'll understand just how awful the mainstream press is at getting facts right, let alone complex situations. So,
just to bring it back to those people who try to strive for objectivity in news, like, look at Dave Rubin. Every report on him talks about him as being alt-right, at least, and a neo-Nazi pretty regularly. He's a gay Jew from Hollywood who lives in Hollywood. He's to the right of, you know, your purple-haired social justice warrior, but he's not alt-right. He's not a Nazi.
Right.
And you see that in, like, every report on him labels him as an alt-right figure, and it's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, that's the last story too. It leads with a portrayal of a Jordan Peterson quote. And we'll get into that when we get there, but that's what they do all the time. And Daniel, I enjoyed the fact that you addressed me and then went on a very, very long rant. I don't know if that's just because you were channeling me and that's why you said my name, but I was at least paying attention this time when you were talking because you said my name at the front. So I appreciate
used
that.
You as a spirit animal in this instance, yes.
Okay, good. Well, I appreciate that because anyone who's been listening to this show for a long time knows exactly what you're talking about because remember Deflategate?
What?
I mean, yeah, that's exactly what you're talking about. And of course, the other person this happens to all the time is Zack Snyder, right? With the things they say about him and the things they make up about his movies and everything. And what these people are playing on is two things. And one is ironic based upon what happened. And that's the thing I'm going to say second. But the first thing is they're playing on the idea that most people are not going to do the research themselves. And most people are not going to delve into things. Because we have all this information available to us all the time, people think they know about everything because they get this brush painted for them by the media, most notably social media, where they can go and it'll have some sort of basic portrayal of a story. And you don't have the time to go into things. You know, back in the day when there wasn't social media, what'd you do? You picked up your paper at the end of the day and you got your basic broad stroke approach to things. But there was a lot more care taken into it because there was one thing that you were given at a time. That's it. The one deliverable, the paper. Now, they play on this idea that everybody's not going to look and they're just throwing out crap all the time just to get clicks. And the second thing is ironic, and now I'm going to sound really crazy here, William, but it's the idea that in reality, what happens if somebody keeps saying false things about you and there is no unbiased mediating group to protect you from those lies being said about you over and over again? Let's talk about school. So if you're in school and somebody keeps spreading rumors about you and the principal or a teacher or a parent or a friend even doesn't do anything to stop that person from spreading the rumors, what eventually happens between you and that person? Physical confrontation. That is the way the world works. That is why we have things like government and we don't have pure anarchy, because everything will devolve into violence. And if the society doesn't trust the press anymore, they will start to respond in this way. I'm not saying it's right to devolve into violence in this way, but it is what will happen. If you think your only recourse is to fight back violently, physically, that's what will happen. There are consequences to your actions. And this entire article by the press is saying all the responsibility is on the audience, not the press. They can just say whatever they want about you and they can get away with it, because you need to be okay with that because they're important.
And it's interesting, yeah, I think, by the way, the violence point goes both ways. So I agree with you, and I want to be careful that we're not seen as advocating that approach, by the way.
Just no, I'm not. Antifa is the one who did it first. I want to be very clear about that. Antifa made it okay. Antifa made it okay by going out and putting a Midsider's husband in the hospital.
Right. Indeed. And the violence point goes in the other direction as well. So not only are the people frustrated by the press going to lead to violence, but there's the people frustrated by the press in the other direction. And what I mean is the people who actually believe what's being written and then will come to the conclusion that there is no hope for them. They are being oppressed. They are being held down. They are being dominated by whatever it is, whites, males, cisgenders, the president, the Republicans, the Supreme Court, whatever it is, and they will reach out to violence. It's being in this constant state of agitation, this constant state of heightened, sensitivities, everything, with no recourse. Because, I mean, what does the press tell you to do? Nothing. Resist. What does that mean in reality, to resist? And at what point do you just go, fuck it, I'm going to punch a Nazi or a Republican or any white guy that I see?
I think
it's violence
I'm a
on
more,
either side.
Yeah, I agree with both of your points. I just want to inject a little bit of optimism in here.
No.
You see, especially on YouTube and other places on the internet, there's a lot more of long-form discussions happening. You know, Dave Rubin's one of them, Joe Rogan's another, and there's a lot of podcasts that take that long form. And you see people actually discussing ideas more, trying to be objective, trying to get towards the facts more. And I think it's actually, in the long term, it's a good thing that the mainstream media is dying right now. They're resorting to just doubling down on their tactics. These are becoming transparent to people. They're becoming better at not falling for clickbait. They're becoming better at understanding that, oh, I need to think about, like, this story comes from this news outlet. That's probably not right. Let me check a few others and start to triangulate and figure out what the actual truth is. And I think people are waking up to this, and I think that's a good thing. And that's the way you fight this is you support places that you can get your news that actually does their research and presents you what they know and they don't know, what their bias is at the end after they've presented the facts, and let you decide for yourself. This idea that journalists not only that journalists should not try to strive to be objective, but that they are the arbiters of truth is exactly what we need to fight against.
Yeah. Justin, William, why don't we start a new news outlet, because that's exactly what the world needs, but we'll call it Not First News. And our entire thing will be, our slogan will be, never quick, always accurate. And we'll take days, weeks if we have to confirm facts before we report them. How about that? Think that'd go over? Can I get funding? Where's Bill Gates?
Let's start. Let's see if the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation will fund it.
Or Elon.
Or maybe the
Where's
California
Elon?
Commission. Yeah, the California Commission for Fake News might fund it.
That's right.
Yeah, I was going to say it's better than Elon's idea.
That's right. Not First News. You heard it here first, folks. Except maybe you didn't. Okay. So
podcast copyright the Midside 2018. If you could do a postmark copyright.
To this story. Except to give you a little meta side here. Welcome to the meta side, which is I just now noticed, Justin, that this story, which is not old, but a little dry, and that's the U.S. withdraws from the UN Human Rights Council. Not a story about Anthony Kennedy here in the news, Justin? Just noticed that? Not going to talk about the Supreme Court? Biggest opening of this court in modern history? Not going to talk about it?
Do you want to go ahead right now? I mean, is there anything else more to say besides what you just said and that people are mad that Trump gets another nomination? What else is there to say?
Talk about what you know, what would be good here, what, you know, what would be bad here. Are there actual consequences? I don't know. The Human Rights Council thing to me is a bunch of hooey. Everyone knows it's hooey. We should stop pretending that the UN is anything other than a bunch of pompous morons who just get paid to go have trips to New York and do debaucherous things while they're there and double park on the streets without consequence because of diplomatic immunity. Not only should the U.S. have withdrawn from the UN Human Rights Council, we should withdraw from the UN in its entirety and kick them out of New York. Any follow-up thoughts, Justin?
No, that's pretty much what I wanted to say, actually.
Any follow-up thoughts, William?
I think that if someone's amount of vote in the UN could be proportionate to the amount of individual rights their government has, that would be my magic wand that I would wave at the UN. So, you know, North Korea would have negative 3,000 votes, and then a place like the United States would have, you know, like one Google votes.
Yeah, like UN. Okay. Anyway, the fact that places like Saudi Arabia can. Okay, forget it. Anthony Kennedy's retiring. Justin, comments?
I mean, I can reductio ad simplify. I don't even know if that's a thing, but I just made it up. Just like you did. Like, it's like I said, I mean, yeah, it's interesting and it's important for the history of this country. But the big story is just that Trump gets another nominee and this could swing the court, right? And make
but,
it so.
Right, it's not that he just gets another nominee. It's not as if, you know, Thomas kicked off here, right? This Kennedy is known as the swing vote, the guy who gets to decide if, you know, Roe v. Wade gets overturned or if gays have to be put in concentration camps or whatever the story du jour is. That's a huge deal for Trump or any president. Could have been for President Hillary Clinton.
So give us some details here, Daniel, since you're the expert and clearly you want this to turn into me asking you the questions rather than vice versa.
I don't.
Well, it's becoming that. So my question is, how old is Kennedy? Why did he retire? And why is Ruth Bader Ginsburg still alive?
How is she still alive?
I'm sorry, how?
I think he's 80 or 81, but don't quote me on that. But he's right around that age. He's retiring because he's old and he wants to not spend the rest of his life doing this. It's a pretty rough schedule. You get a lot of months off in the middle. But when you're actually working, especially at the end of terms, it's a fairly rough schedule and there's a lot to manage. It's honestly fairly difficult if you're engaged in the whole thing. And Kennedy might not be the sharpest tool in the shed, but he was very engaged in the process, if he wasn't particularly good at it, in my opinion. You know, he wants to go do other things. He's going to die soon. He wants to not die on the bench. And how is Ruth Bader Ginsburg still alive? I don't know. Formaldehyde? Did you see Weekend at Bernie's? It's kind of like that. Weekend at Ruthie's.
That's what the left's doing right now?
Yeah. She's actually been dead for a decade, and Walt Disney animatronics have kept her alive on the bench. So,
has anyone actually died on the bench? Because these are four life appointments, but then people retire. So they really mean they're until you decide you don't want to do work anymore.
Yeah, I mean, not literally on the bench that I know of, but look, Scalia just died while he was serving. He didn't retire. So it happens. I'm sure it's happened a bunch of times. But here's the whole thing to me, and I'll kick this over to William. There are, I think, legitimate reasons to think that this could end up badly for rights. You know, I'm not a howling leftist and saying that we're all going to be rounded up and put in internment camps like the Japanese. But at the same time, you could have five votes now to overturn Roe v. Wade. I don't see that that's an impossibility. Oddly, Roberts might be the swing vote on that. But so, William, do you have any concerns about this? Or maybe a more pointed question, what's the worst possible outcome and the best possible outcome in this situation to you?
Well, I guess the worst possible outcome would be someone who continues to grant the government additional powers. And then the best possible outcome is someone who will be stalwart in the advocacy and the protection of the First Amendment. That's the best case. So the best case I see here is you get somebody who leans more conservative, who is a free speech absolutist, decent on private property, someone who would have voted against the campaign finance reform would be the example that I would use. And yeah, you might get Roe versus Wade overturned. I think Roe versus Wade was the right outcome, but for the wrong legal reasoning, which is probably a whole nother segment in itself. So I think it probably would be good in the long term to get it overturned and have Congress actually act and set up and protect that right the way it should be. But yeah, I think that's kind of the range of actions I see here. In the alternative universe where we have a Hillary Clinton presidency, I think it would be terrifying, right? Because you would have someone for sure who would be nominated who would see violence or speech as violence, and we would be in some serious trouble.
Another Sonia Sotomayor, a wise, learned Latina woman who constantly votes to suppress speech rights. Yes.
Well, Daniel, we're kind of in the middle of like a movement here. And what I mean by that is there's cycles in the way these people die or retire, correct? And we're in the middle of a cycle right now. So when will the next one be? In like 30 years, 40 years when we start getting new judges again?
Yeah, I mean, Trump's putting young judges on the bench. The oldest judge I think he's considering is 53, which means they could, serve 20 to 30 years pretty easily, the way things are going. But he's considering a lot of people who are in their 40s, so 35 years on the bench. But right now, there are at least two more justices who are in their 80s. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is, by all accounts, she's out and about, okay? So don't get me wrong, I don't have any inside information. She's out and about doing things, but man, she could go any minute now.
Well, I mean, so is my grandmother, who's in her 80s, and she still thinks the Kennedys are American royalty, so.
My best case scenario for this, we renominate Gorsuch and let him have two votes. That's my best case scenario.
He found the hidden advantage that's been buried on the island somewhere that gives him two votes at a tribal council.
That's right. Two votes. We should just rename it Tribal Council. It'd be more fun. People pay more attention. And then every year we vote one justice out and get a new one.
The reason I was asking about the cycle, Daniel, is are we going to avoid getting a social justice warrior on the bench that's going to believe things like William just said, that speech is violence?
Or at some point,
are they going to start making rulings based on privileges and microaggressions?
Well, we went through that period in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. They didn't use that language, but, all the way, even through the 70s, the court basically ruled on things based on, what the discourse of the time allows or what the majority feels is right in the historical moment and all that bull crap, which is nonsense. But Sonia Sotomayor, look, there was a 5-4 decision. In what case was it? It was an important one this term, but basically the minority, the liberals on the court with the four, essentially said, maybe it's time to look at free speech rights differently. Essentially saying, there are some things that probably could be tamped out and we don't need free speech rights for. And that's scary considering the age of these people and people like Sonia Sotomayor are so willing to give up our free speech rights. But so, I don't know. It's all fairly terrible. I think Gorsuch is as good as it ever is going to get in our lifetime. And if we could find someone like him, I would be somewhat happy. But we're not going to.
So, Judge Reinhold.
That's right. Judge Reinhold. Mike Judge. Let's have Mike Judge. Call him Justice Judge. Be great.
Judge Judy.
Can you pass this consent quiz. That's right. We have a consent quiz on the show. This will be the one of two quizzes featured on the show. Is that a spoiler or a teaser? I don't know. Earlier this year,
Australian universities. Gave me crap for spoiling the last story, and then William like said what the whole story is. You didn't say anything to him about it.
Well, that's because he's like who's the guy? Andy Richter. He's Andy Richter to your Conan. You have the obligation to keep the show on track. He can do whatever he wants to sidetrack the show and make it funny and hilarious. You, sir, are supposed to be the straight man in this game.
Conan's the funny one, though.
Yeah.
I know. The whole metaphor fell apart the moment I started it.
And did you say straight man on purpose? Is that like a microaggression?
That was on purpose. That was supposed to be a joke.
I feel oppressed.
Okay.
Good.
I mean, I figure if we're doing the meta side this week, what about the fact that I gave you the outline 2 days ago, you okayed the news stories, and then you also haven't said anything about the news story since? You just want to put me on blast on the show?
I don't actually read things when you send them to me. I just put a thumbs up. I'm like, yep, that's fine. Whatever URLs these are.
I get so much psychological comfort from that thumbs up, too. I feel...
Just to know that I haven't read a single thing. I just count... I count the URLs to make sure there are four, and I go, that's fine.
Four links to anti-Star Wars stories next week.
I won't notice until the middle of the show. Earlier this year, Australian universities adopted a mandatory online module explaining sex and consent. The module, designed by UK-based course developer Epigeum, includes a series of quizzes exploring what constitutes appropriate sexual conduct. Students must get 100% on each quiz in order to complete the module and receive their marks for the semester. Basically, it takes about an hour to complete, and the modules are, at least according to one observer, bloated and condescending, much like a driving exam, and are so horrible and irritating that the purpose is actually to, quote, cock-block participants from ever having sex with each other. That's all a quote. Which is hilarious. So the whole point of this is to explain what consent is and get students to have more consent on campus, but this feels a little bit weird in terms of government craziness. So let's dive into this module. Justin, did you take a look at these questions ahead of time?
Oh, yeah, I failed all of them.
Oh, okay. Well, here's some things. For instance, a photo of two stick figures in bed, and this is just explaining essentially what consent is, and it says, Kea likes going down on Maya. Maya is asleep. You know where this is going. Kea thinks it might be fun to surprise Maya. Kea pauses and thinks how she'd feel if she swapped places with Maya. Kea decides to wait until the morning. Good decision, Kea. Justin, was that a good decision?
I mean, doesn't that depend on what Kea likes and what Maya likes? Like, I don't understand. Like, now we're prescribing for every human being what they like. Don't some people like surprise oral sex? Yes. I don't know if you guys
also
just heard
a good
that
pop punk band name.
Yeah, I don't know if you just
sex.
Heard that in the background. The chorus of yes in the background.
That was my first thought about these stick figures. Are Kea and Maya total strangers?
Yeah, there's no context here. So that's exactly the point I was going to make, is like, you have to put yourself, like, these cartoon figures, like, just, we'll have a link to it, of course, on themidside.com, but they're asexual, and not in the sense of, like, they're just, like, they don't have a sex, right? And the names are purposely vague, and you're just like, so if you just are sleeping in a bed with a random stranger, like, it's totally, right. That's the context.
If you open your eyes into consciousness, and you are a stick figure named Kea, and your first thought is, I want to go down on this other stick figure named Maya who's next to me, what should you do? This is Rawlsian sex ed. This is literally know nothing about yourself, your partner, or your context, and make a moral decision. How is that possible?
I don't know, but I want to take it one step deeper. So,
careful.
You know,
I haven't said yes yet.
Consent to that, William.
we've all had long term partners. Some of us currently have long term partners. Some of us are still single. You can go to my OKCupid profile.
He's not allowed on Grindr anymore because he identifies as a woman.
That's right. So getting into the context thing, I pretty much had a rule with my last long-term boyfriend that, you know, like oral sex was like a requirement in the morning. Like it was like that is a completely valid way to wake me up if I missed the alarm clock. So,
oh God,
like,
this show.
Do we not have a context of a physical relationship? And the deeper I want to go here, and then I'll let you jump in, Justin. The deeper I want to go here is like when you're in a long-term relationship, like that's how these things get initiated. It's not like I was like asking for consent constantly. You know what I mean? Like it's a totally different context if this is like a first date or a second date. Or the first time we've slept together, and then I wake up in the morning and immediately go down on someone, like that. There's the whole context here is just stripped away.
Stripped.
But William, is your headboard purple? And when you sleep, do your arms look like a wishbone?
No.
Justin describing.
And I don't have Zoidberg claws for hands.
That makes certain acts very difficult.
I think Maya just doesn't want surprise oral sex from Kaya because their names are so disturbingly similar.
Yeah. At first I thought they were related and I was like, what the hell is going on?
Is this a Fight Club scenario?
So in the verbal category, for example, this module, it advises, quote, pause to ask how it feels. Remember to pause both before and during sex. And it suggests you say things like, does this feel good? Can I touch you here? Do you like this? Do you want me to go slowly, gently, faster, harder? So that sounds romantic.
Sounds like a Daft Punk song.
It says our bodies can respond in unexpected ways. Remember, I don't want to read the rest of this. The point
is... Surprise boner? Is that what we're talking about now?
Yes. Also, I wonder how you get consent from someone who can't verbally, you know, give it to you, like someone who's mute. This whole thing
Ooh,
is based
that's a
on
great
verbal
point.
Consent.
This is yeah. This is ableist.
This whole thing is just an autistic person's guide to sex. Like, I'm sorry, if you're hooking up with someone and you need them to say explicitly if it feels good or not, then you're not paying attention. Like, you should know if what you're doing feels good or not for the other person. You don't need them to be like, yes, this feels good, keep going. Like, unless you're autistic.
So here's a question from the module. For you two. The question is, which of the following is the most accurate definition of consent? Here are your three options. Number one, consent must be given by choice, by someone who has the freedom and capacity to make that choice. Number two, consent must be given in writing, by someone who has the skills and experience to make that choice. Number three, consent must be given by choice, by someone who has the experience and knowledge to make that choice. Which of those is the correct answer? And by the way, there is only one correct answer here.
I already took this quiz, so I know the answer, so I don't want to give it. William.
Anyone? Bueller?
I couldn't decide. Like, it's clearly not the writing. Well,
although
I mean,
someone
in social
can't
justice
speak.
Land, yeah.
Well,
exactly.
That's exactly what I was going to say. In today's day and age, the writing is the right answer. You better cover your ass and get that in writing.
That's right.
This goes back to that consent app that people were developing where you could consent to individual sex acts. Maybe it like sends you a push alert and you have to keep consenting. So like, you know, during, you know, when Maya is going down on Kaya or whatever the name is, she could just keep pressing a button.
That's right.
Is that what they call
it? In fact, you just have to hold the button down. Yeah. So the answer that is correct is number one. Consent must be given by choice by someone who has the freedom and capacity to make that choice, which differs from number three, by the way, which is the exact same beginning. Consent must be given by choice by someone who has the experience and knowledge to make that choice. Experience and knowledge as contrasted to freedom and capacity. Okay. Interesting.
Wait, that actually raises an interesting point about the second one. Consent must be given in writing by someone who has the skills and experience to make that choice. It doesn't say the ability to make that choice. So as long as they have the skills and experience to make that choice, I can coerce them into signing a consent contract.
It's all so strange. isn't human sexuality just too difficult for this? Like, there are bright lines. Of course there are bright lines. If someone says no and they are actually making an effort to get away from you, that is a clear bright line, right? But there are many things, as uncomfortable of a statement as this is, there are many things that don't fall so squarely on one side or the other of that bright line. It's unclear sometimes, and relationships, all human relationships, sexual or otherwise, are complicated. And to get down to this kind of level where we're making modules out of it that have multiple choice questions and horrible stick figure examples seems not only sterile and inhuman, but it's going to hurt people in the long run because we're not allowing other human beings to actually figure out their relationships with each other. We're just mandating government interference in human nature, which is bound to be awful for everyone involved. It has to be awful for everyone involved.
Yeah, Justin, I have a question for you. First, a point about, isn't this something that Adam Carolla talks about all the time, about how we're turning everything into rape? You know, like saying ouch might be rape after that. Like, if you accidentally are doing something, that could be rape. But the question,
like,
if you
fall and it accidentally goes into her butt, yeah.
But my question for you, Justin, is, are we coming... Are we coming? That sounds acrobatic. Are we coming full circle? Is this coming back to those corny sex ed videos from the 50s where it's like, you know, where everything is really awkward and you've got your, you know, Johnny and Susie? Oh no, they might get pregnant because they held hands. Like, aren't we coming like full circle back to that sort of like complete platonic view of like sex requiring all these steps?
Well, no, because Johnny and Susie both sound white. And white people aren't allowed to have sex anymore.
And cisgendered.
Also, if you're going to use names for men and women nowadays, the correct names are Chad and Stacy. Read up on your incel literature. Get it right. But I mean, it's very much going in that direction in regards to, because of all my jokes, I forgot what I was going to say about this stuff with your question. Say your question again.
Nice. My brilliant question.
Yeah, it was a good question.
Aren't we coming full circle? Aren't we coming full circle back to that platonic view of sex from the 50s?
The platonic view as far as sex is... Unpack that a little bit for the audience. Also,
like, you have
for Justin.
You have to follow certain steps, procedures.
Yeah, there's
you have to be married.
Exactly.
There has, you know, like, there has to be holding hands, and there's another base, and there's this. You know, it's very...
It's basically sex by checklist, right? Like, well, first you do X, and then you do Y, and then Z, and then you get married, and then you get to have sex.
Okay, yeah, I remember what I was going to say now. So this, exactly what you're talking about, is because the women in the feminist movement who are leading this charge only know about sex from watching these videos. They watched these videos in school when they were a kid, gained lots of weight, and dyed their hair, and nobody wanted to have sex with them. So that's what they think sex is. But in all seriousness, this has to do with the fact that the women's revolution.
I thought that was a joke, and then it went a place, and then it came back. So, okay, good.
No, in all seriousness, this is the women's revolution coming back and biting them in the ass in a way they don't like. The apps like Tinder exist now where it's socially acceptable to just have a one-night stand and never call a girl, and they don't like that anymore because this is the whole like regret thing, that now they have responsibility as well, that it makes it harder for them to be the gatekeepers because they've empowered women to treat sex the same way men treat sex, which isn't in line with the way women are psychologically and biologically, where they are more the gatekeepers. So you take away the gatekeeper role from women and you make it so everyone is acting in more the quote unquote traditional male way. And then you also denigrate the male way, where you act like the male way is just going around and having sex with anyone, no matter what, indiscretionately, with no discretion. And this is where you end up. So yeah, it's completely reactionary. This is what we've talked about before with the whole social justice movement, where it's become religious and puritanical in a way.
The new religion.
So, Daniel, what checklist do you use for sex with your wife? How many steps are there? Is it multiple pages? How does that work?
Well, he has to ask her how to.
I've never been able to read it.
He has to ask her at a certain step. I don't remember what number it is, but he showed it to me before. He has to ask her for the code to disarm the bombing vest.
Yeah. I also had to move the scimitar to the side.
Yeah.
It gets painful otherwise. The ignorant do not have a right to an audience. Certainly that applies to our show.
Yeah, we've been canceled finally. Is that what that means?
This is a New York Times op-ed by Professor Brian W. Van Norden, who is a philosophy professor somewhere. I don't know where. I weep for his students, though. Wuhan University, Yale, NUS College, and Vassar College. He is the author, most recently, of Taking Back Philosophy, A Multicultural Manifesto. So you know where this is going. All right. He begins like this. On June 17th, the political commentator Ann Coulter, appearing as a guest on Fox News, asserted that crying migrant children separated from their parents are child actors. Okay. Does this groundless claim deserve as much airtime as, for example, a historically informed argument from Ta-Nehisi Coates that structural racism makes the American dream possible? I'm going to continue, but you got one example right up front, and that's the one you go with? as the one that's supposed to be the rational example? That's the one you go with? All right. Let's see if it gets better.
Well, rhetorically, Daniel, if you're going to make a point about the ignorant not deserving a audience, you should pick an ignorant example from both sides.
Yeah, that would be interesting. But no, he went with that one. Okay, let's see if it gets better. Let's see if this philosophy professor recovers. Quote, Jordan Peterson, a professor of psychology at the University of Toronto, has complained that men can't control crazy women because men have absolutely no respect for someone they cannot physically fight. What? Does this adolescent opinion deserve as much of an audience as the nuanced thoughts of Kate Mann, a professor of philosophy at Cornell University, about the role of empathy in supporting misogyny? End quote. The professor has now had two opportunities to present contrasting arguments that he considers arguments that do deserve audiences, and has failed miserably on both accounts. Justin, first, let's just address the nonsense going on in the beginning of this article, and then we'll get to the nonsense going on in the latter part of this article. What say you?
Sure. I mean, the whole thing's nonsense, so I don't really know where you were going to start and end with this line, but okay.
It's not a bright line.
So you don't consent, you're saying?
That's right. I don't consent to his ignorance. No, I mean, he's trying to set up dichotomies here, right? So let's start just generally address this whole dichotomy thing. And particularly, I know you want to respond to the Jordan Peterson point. That's really what I'm setting up for you.
Oh. Oh, was that the setup?
I'm not sure I could make it any more clear. Yes.
Well, I mean, it's not only that it's completely, as I said, like, you pick two people from the quote-unquote right? So you say, oh, we're going to say the ignorant don't deserve an audience, so we're going to say Ann Coulter and Jordan Peterson. It's not like you picked Ann Coulter and Anita Sarkeesian to show that both sides have their ignorance that don't deserve an audience. You had to pick both. And then you had to misportray both. The whole thing was trying to make it seem like Jordan Peterson is supporting physical abuse. Like, out of everything you've read and heard from Jordan Peterson, has he ever said that?
No.
What they're doing is avoiding the basic premise of the benefits and the good things of masculinity, the virtues of masculinity that Jordan Peterson talks about, undercutting that, and then picking specific words to make his point look bad. The entire point of what Jordan Peterson's saying is, if there's someone who just spouts off crazy things and you have no way of punishing them, you don't take that person seriously. This is what I talked about in the first story. It's what's going on with the news. They think they should be able to just say whatever they want without having any consequences, when in reality, the consequences are somebody's going to hit you in the face if you keep running your mouth and you have no consequences. And that's what he's talking about with women. We have a system set up that, let's take divorce, for instance. I'm going full red pill right now. But let's take divorce, for instance. So the woman continually says crazy things over and over and over again. And even if you argue with her and you tell her why she's being crazy, then she just keeps saying crazy things and doesn't listen to you. And eventually, you divorce her. And who gets punished for that? She's disconnected from reality, and who gets punished? The man does. The you guy. Do. So that's what Jordan Peterson's talking about. If the system is set up in a way where there's no recourse against these crazy women, men aren't going to take them seriously. And the author here is acting like it's a package deal. Like Jordan Peterson is saying all women are crazy. No, he's specifically saying the subcategory of women that are crazy are enabled by the system where they don't have to face any consequences by being crazy.
Yes.
Is that the rant you wanted?
Thank you. Much obliged. So, William, I'll move you into the second part of this article, and then we'll all get into the meat of it, which is, he goes on to say that, look, there are clearly people who are rational and clearly people who aren't, but our notion of free speech is essentially this John Stuart Millsian notion of that we learn even from the ignorant, we learn why they're wrong, and we learn historical context, and we learn to sharpen our own arguments from hearing wrong opinions. But then he goes on to basically say, look, that's all nonsense because the mainstream media just makes us dumber and dumber and dumber because they're going to pick the opinions that go to the broadest possible audiences and not ones that are even academically wrong, just sort of the stupidest wrong arguments. So he says, and this is getting to the question finally, I promise. He says, you know, some people have advocated suppressing right-wing perspectives. He thinks that's immoral, he says, and impractical. This is his solution. He says, quote, instead, I suggest that we could take a big step forward by distinguishing free speech from just access. Access to the general public granted by institutions like television networks, newspapers, magazines, and university lectures is a finite resource. Justice requires that, like any finite good, institutional access should be apportioned based on merit and on what benefits the community as a whole. There is a clear line between censoring someone and refusing to provide them with institutional resources for disseminating their ideas. William, did this Marxist professor just accidentally induce property rights?
No. In fact, he is arguing for the fairness doctrine. And that's something that we had in the 80s where they tried to say, based on your political view, you had to, if you said something left-wing, you had to allow someone right-wing to come on to respond on the radio and television. And it was evil. You're telling someone, the person who owns that radio station or that television station, what they have to do with their property. And I would push back on you a little bit. My reading of this article, he's actually saying that truth and rationality aren't a thing. He's arguing against Mills. He's saying that there is no objective truth, that everything should be looked through the Marxist historical context lens. And he's making this philosophical argument kind of in a roundabout way. I mean, if he came out and said it, you would see it as being absurd. The closest he comes is earlier in the article when he's talking about how naive it is to think that there is truth, right? And I think it's really important. Like Mills, he gets Mills wrong too. I mean, that's not surprising since he got Jordan Peterson, and I'm sure he got Ann Coulter wrong, though she's detestable. But for Mills, like he really articulated quite persuasively that you should have all views in a public discourse. That you know, even if someone's wrong or they disagree with you or they're offensive, that you cannot base the content of their view or the content of their speech. You can't suppress it based on that content. And it's really weird to like, what would it even mean in practice if you decided that some government was going to decide who had access to the tools of speech, right? It just descends into this into a totalitarian regime quite quickly, because who gets to decide? Oh, well, the majority or the person who controls the government, and that quickly slides into the abyss.
It's interesting. No, he's definitely arguing against Mill. Sorry if I didn't make that clear in my my reading of the article. He's arguing against Mill, saying that Mill's notion of free speech is based on he degrades these quote-unquote Enlightenment ideals, and he's being degrading there by saying that they couldn't even agree on what it meant to have a historical method of reasoning. So why should we, you know, why should we rely on them? There are multiple ways to know things, right? Not just reason, of course. But my point is, the professor has backed into something that, to me, rings true, even if it's for the wrong reasons, and even if I think ultimately he'd probably back a government solution. But he says this at the end. The invincibly ignorant and the intellectual huckster have every right to express their opinions, but their right to free speech is not the right to an audience. And so what he's saying is people like Morning Joe and MSNBC and all these places shouldn't have on people who are terrible and who have bad whatever. My point is, they have every right to do that or not. And if the professor actually consistently held to what he's talking about here, he would have to come at some point to this notion that it's because, you know, that these are private companies, they're private organizations, news or otherwise, they're allowed to have whoever they want on their shows. They're allowed to have whatever they want on their shows. If they want to have good, bad, otherwise, if they want to have only Democrats, they want to have only Republicans, they want to have only socialists, only anarchists, whatever. It's their news shows. That's the point. And in a marketplace of ideas then, which I think is the point that he's missing here, we will have ideas win out that help human flourishing, but only in a marketplace of ideas, not in something that's subsidized by government, controlled by government, mandated by government in some way, etc. Only with the free exchange of ideas from people of the ignorant side, the correct side, the right, the left, the up, the down, the mid side, etc. Only in that scenario will we actually have good ideas come to the top.
Yeah, the argument boils down to individuals can't decide, can't understand or arrive at the truth themselves. So therefore, we're going to put other individuals in charge of deciding for them. And it's absurd once you spell it out without all the words that he used.
He did use a lot of words to essentially say anyone who is right of Lenin is a fascist. So, Justin, what say you? Should we not have an audience anymore?
It's just absurd, because what he's essentially complaining about is how news has degenerated to basically Marvel. It's the news now is just fast food. It's what I was saying earlier. It's you go on, you get a double cheeseburger and you leave, but you're not really satisfied and you feel like you ate, but you didn't really eat. And he's complaining about that. And his solution is just more regulation and have someone in charge of it, someone who's an arbiter deciding what should be good and what isn't. I mean, William, you're talking about Platonic and Platonism. Isn't he just simply saying a philosopher king should decide all of these things for everyone?
I think so, yeah.
And that's what's disturbing if you really look at it. And here we go. Here comes the psychologizing, Daniel. Isn't he essentially saying he should be in charge and that he's tired of everyone's ignorance and they're not listening to him, so he wants to be put in charge?
I think he's saying he's upset. He's upset that they're not in charge. They're realizing that they're not in charge. And so he's upset about that.
Yeah, I'm saying specifically he himself. All he said, look, the reason it's bad writing in the front is he's just being purely emotional and he's just ranting about the things he doesn't like. That's what he's doing. It's like if I started an article and I was just like, oh man, I can't even think of an example right now. Isn't Shinsuke Nakamura a really annoying professional wrestler? Oh, and also this other wrestler is really annoying. And that's all I wrote about, rather than writing about objectively what I thought would be good or bad for professional wrestling. And then I ended the article and I basically said, so I should be the one who's in charge of what's going on in wrestling. So in that sense, this article is no different than everyone else nowadays on the internet who sits there and types their opinions out. It's like, oh yeah, I should be the one writing DC movies rather than the experts. So this is a guy who's somehow become an expert at pretending he's an expert.
It's a sad state of affairs when these little twoies are, you know, quintessential examples of what is happening to philosophy departments all over the world. So,
well,
I weep for academia.
Yeah, and the Tui thing is exactly well taken, because isn't that what happened to Zack Snyder? Why he was eventually kicked out of the DCEU?
Yeah.
Everyone ran around rather than understanding the story he was telling. Just like we started with at the top. Whoever had the square this week on Justin Connects Jordan Peterson and Zack Snyder, you win the prize. Please contact me on any of the social medias. No, just
inside
like Jordan.
Bingo. No free space. No free space, no free loaders.
Just like Jordan Peterson was misconstrued, Zack Snyder's movies are misconstrued because rather than understand, people just want to misportray because all they want is they want what they feel to be what's most important.
Yeah.
So on that note, want to talk about some more art?
Sure.
It's time for The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Quick review. I saw Uncle Drew last night. Uncle Drew is the movie about the street basketball tournament where Elron or whatever that guy's name, Howery, the comedian, gathers a team of elder statesmen. And when I say elder, I mean they put a bunch of people in old person makeup to have them win the street ball tournament. And the main guy who drives this team is named Uncle Drew, and Kyrie Irving, the point guard for the Celtics, plays this guy, and he's the most dominant player, and he gathers a team of old people such as Shaquille O'Neal, made up to look even older than he is. There's not really much to say about this movie beyond it's just a shallow movie. So if you've ever wondered what a movie looks like where they're just doing paint by the numbers of all the beats they have to hit and all the sort of thematic ideas they need to hit, this is it. This movie has a lot of interesting things going on where the main character who gathers the team is just raised in foster care his whole life. So he doesn't have a family. He doesn't have any role models. And he tries to participate in sports and do something very masculine, but eventually it just really undercuts his self-esteem to the point that he lets himself be taken advantage of by a woman. And then this team comes along and eventually it becomes his family. But the summary I gave you is exactly just the level of depth in this movie. If they had gone into these ideas and actually demonstrated how these affected him in reality and how this changed his life, it would have been a much more compelling movie. As it is, it's just sort of, it's inoffensive. It's not bad. It's enjoyable. There's a couple funny jokes. The funniest joke is still the joke in the trailer where Shaq makes a joke about nobody passing him the ball and he says, "Pass the ball, Kobe." And who's a basketball fan will know why that's a funny joke. That's still the best joke in the movie. But beyond that, there's nothing really remarkable about the movie. I wouldn't say don't see it, but I also wouldn't say see it. There's nothing either way about it. Although technically, I will say that they clearly had trouble with the fact that they were using actual basketball players as actors. Because when you're editing, and there are multiple takes, and you're editing multiple takes together from different angles, you really have to rely on the fact that these professional actors can hit the same marks every time. Well, it was clear these non-professional actors weren't hitting the same marks every take, and the editing really suffered from that. So if anyone's ever watched a movie with me, and Daniel can attest to this, or a show, I'll just go bad at it, bad at it, bad at it. And what I'm pointing at is when the cuts don't match. And what I mean by that is the actor's not standing in the same place, or there's something different with the background. And there was a lot of that in this movie. So if you want like high art, don't go see this movie. If you want to just enjoy yourself and it's a fun movie that actually, I would say it has a positive sense of life and wants to see the people succeed and wants to see the bad people be punished, then don't see. Then do see it.
So Justin, I have a question. Sorry, you go all Rain Man when you're at the movie theater? Or?
Oh, with the bad edit thing? Yeah, it's like the number one way I'm like Rain Man. It's the word. I can't not see bad edits anymore. It's terrible.
So, Justin, my question to you is, you said the movie was inoffensive, but don't we have old face all over this movie? Isn't it an ageist movie?
It's technically ageist. It's also, if you're super sensitive and a super pussy, it's also heightist because he's shorter than all of the 6.5 foot to 7+ basketball players. The guy, the coach that brings the team together, and they make fun of him for being short the whole movie. So if, you know, if you're sensitive to that, you're going to get upset about that too. So yeah, you're right.
Yeah, good trigger warnings.
Yeah, no, they're good. They're good trigger warnings. Although let me say something. If I, at my height, am friends with a 8 foot tall person who they jokingly call a monster the whole movie, we have a monster on our team, I would expect him to constantly rip on me for my height. Just saying. He wouldn't be a good friend if he didn't. All right, we're about to move on to Forward and to Trailer Takedown here. As always, if you want to watch the trailers before you listen to the show, or even right now, you want to pause and watch the trailers before we talk to them, or weave it in. After one trailer, you pause and watch the next one. After that discussion, you pause and watch the final one. You can do it that way. They're all on the midside.com on the latest Trailer Takedown preview post.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
The Hate U Give is the first of two trailers that nearly got me lynched in Discord this week. Although I'm not careful. Sure I should have used the word lynch right there. So this is the story of a girl who I think lives in like the impoverished inner city where the black people act stereotypically black. And what I mean by that is the sort of ignorant gangster getaway that they stereotype. I'm using the word stereotype here very intentionally because the trailer does this. But she goes to school in the very rich white school where everything is great and they would say privileged. The guy she's interested in is from her true life or whatever. This is the thing. The trailer plays a lot with identity, right? She feels like she's living two identities. So even though she's in school at this rich, privileged school 90% of the time, she still feels like because of her skin color, she is with the quote-unquote stereotypical black identity. As you can see, there's a whole undercurrent of collectivism in this movie. And then, this is where it gets interesting, or worse, depending on your perspective. The guy she's interested in is not from the school she goes to, but it's from the community she's in all the time. And she's in the car with him, and he's driving, and he gets pulled over. So, of course, it's a white cop. You know where this is going. Although, I will say it's interesting the way the trailer does it. And he gets shot by the cop and killed. And then it becomes, how does she deal with these two sides of herself when there's this major tragedy in her community that affects her so much? She feels like she's part of this one community that is attacking her other community. So she's torn. Although what's interesting about when the guy gets shot by the cop is he starts moving when the cop has him like get out of the car and like put his hands behind his back or whatever. And she's like, what are you doing? Stop. And he reaches for a comb to make it look like he's reaching for a brush. So to me, the trailer almost reads like he's trying to make himself a martyr, like he was trying to get shot. So I'd be interested to see what you guys think of that. As far as seeing this movie or not, it doesn't look like it's poorly done. And part of me wants to see it as like a cultural artifact. But I just don't think I want to take the time out of my day to see something that's only going to further push this divisive stereotype of white privilege and cops targeting black men. Tackle. Daniel?
Not even going to bury the lead here. It's going to be a tackle. I think that aside from the fact that the writing looks forced and the acting looks stilted, it's horrible. It's a horrible message. It's a horrible message to keep perpetuating. There are ways to do this story, I think, that are thoughtful and interesting, nuanced, dramatic, compelling, all those wonderful things that this trailer is unequivocally not. I think that's because the writing is so hitting you over the head with the social justice method that it's going to alienate anyone who has any disagreement whatsoever. It's not looking at this in the way that a big blockbuster Hollywood picture could if it generally wanted to. So hard pass from me.
Tackle.
William.
I think you can tell I'm going to tackle this one as well. And I'm going to, just like the question I had to you during the last part of the last segment, I don't think this is social justice enough. I didn't see any disabled people. There were no clear Hispanics, Asians. If we're going to go all social justice warrior, then we've got to go 100%. But more seriously, this victimhood mentality is a terrible cancer in a lot of different communities. We know we know what the causes of black male death is in according to the statistics. And I think that this is going to be nominated for an Oscar. I think it's going to be, if you look at when it's coming out in October. That's the time to come out if you want an Oscar. And this movie is going to have one of those priceless 100% with the top critics and like 40% with the people on Rotten Tomatoes.
Tackle!
Man, you were being optimistic before, and now you're being so pessimistic. I don't think this movie is going to be anywhere near an Oscar. And part of the reason I think that is the tragedy of this movie. And the tragedy of this movie is it looks like it uses romantic techniques to tell this social justice message. Where if you look at the way it's shot and you look at the way it's produced artistically, didn't mean it like that, Daniel. I mean filmed, and then you look at the way it's produced as far as set design and costume design, they're very much emphasizing different essentializations for each of the two communities she's part of. So they're using a romantic approach to visual storytelling in order to tell this terrible message, and I don't think that that will resonate with the social justice voters in the Academy, because they want something that's more like Moonlight. I mean, you make that joke, William, but Moonlight won because it was about all of these things, and the guy was a drug user, drug dealer, and gay.
So essentially, your argument is kind of William's argument, which is his satirical argument, which is that it's not social justice enough.
Yes, not social justice enough in content and in the way it's shot. It's not naturalistic enough, which is the social justice way to create art.
Interesting. Well, we'll see. I mean, I'm not going to see, but some people will see.
Second trailer.
Assassination Nation is about... I actually don't know. I just think it's interesting this trailer has a bunch of trigger warnings in the front, but I can't tell. Here's something the left does very effectively, which is why I can't tell about this trailer. The left will often take a technique the right should be using to satirize the left and satirizes itself so then it can come around and reassert its point even more strongly. So this trailer is exactly how you would produce and should produce all of a movie that is so unpolitically correct that you have to have all these trigger warnings in the front, and you would put them in there very tongue-in-cheek. And the movie does this in the beginning. So part of me wants to say very positively, well, this is worth seeing because it's making fun of all of this. But it's so well done that I don't think anyone satirizing social justice and trigger warnings would be able to get it this correct. So just out of fear and paranoia and the way everything's going right now, I have to tackle this.
Tackle!
Daniel?
If we're judging purely by the trailer, which is essentially what we should be doing, this is a hard tackle for me for any number of reasons. Then I went and looked up what it's actually about because the trailer is not clear what it's about, and I found this gem. This is from TheVerge.com. Assassination Nation is a vicious, cathartic horror film about misogyny. Yes, the film, what is the genre? It's extremely blunt social satire about sexism and social media mixed with small-town gone-mad horror and high school drama. What is it about? It's about three girls in the suburban town of Salem. Their lives revolve around partying, sex, and social media until an anonymous hacker begins dumping their phone and computer data on 4chan. At first, the hacker targets authority figures like the mayor, whose family values platform masks a hidden life of cross-dressing and Craigslist hookups. But then half the town's secrets are exposed, including a relationship between some of the characters. And then essentially, these girls go on a rampage, killing all these bad people. Basically, what's it really about? The article says, how hypocrisy, a lack of empathy, and a willingness to jump to extreme behaviors is destroying America. Also, how lots of people are pure evil and have to die. So, seems like a rallying cry to Antifa to me. So, with that context, the hardest tackle I've ever tackled in tackle history. In fact, I would watch this first movie once a day for the rest of my life, then watch this movie once.
Tackle!
Yeah, that description really seems like they made a movie that they're trying to say that all the article where all men are incels, remember? It really seems like that.
Yep.
I mean, that goes back to American Beauty, right? Where the character who was like very staunchly conservative and very pro-military was, of course, an in-the-closet gay. Do you remember that in American Beauty?
Yep, totally. They've been
pushing that idea and that trope for years, and they're doing it again. I mean, isn't that exactly what I said, though, Daniel? They've done in this trailer exactly what should be done to satirize them, but they're taking it and using it to make their point even more strongly.
Yeah.
So now they're satirizing the people who would satirize them.
Yep. Here's the final paragraph, and then we'll get to William, who is probably hugging. So sorry, William. I'm just kidding. But most people in Assassination Nation neither deserve nor receive empathy. To paraphrase some of Lily's narration, she's the main character, there are a few good men and women, a few sadistic creeps, and a mass of bystanders who happily participate in misogynistic hate mobs. The last two groups become increasingly and irredeemably monstrous as the film progresses. Catcallers, vigilante cops, transphobic jocks, and predatory older men are all one step away from becoming cold-blooded murderers, and the only way to stop them is to kill them first. Remember how we said there might be a, like, feminist Get Out? This sounds like it. William?
Yeah, I'm going to tackle this. I think you guys covered it. I mean, on the surface, it's got guns, it's got explosions. Like Justin was saying, this is a if this was a satire of what feminists think toxic masculinity is and all the evils of the world are, maybe that would be cool to watch. But you can't imagine this is going to be anything other than monstrous.
Tackle.
I'm just, the fact that you just described it as the feminist Get Out, I mean, I don't know if I can talk for the rest of the show now. That makes me like really, really sad. Like, can you imagine if this movie makes lots of money and gets all the hype Get Out did?
I hope it doesn't. I suspect that for as much as we didn't like Get Out, it is probably better written than this movie. So we shall see.
That's a low bar. I mean, if this movie's worse written than Get Out, it's pretty bad.
Final trailer.
The Predator is the latest movie in the series of movies about the alien who comes to Earth to hunt humans for sport. It's directed by Shane Black. I believe he wrote it as well. He's the man responsible for Iron Man 3, which I don't know about you guys. I liked Iron Man 3, so piss off if you're one of these people who says Iron Man 3 sucks. Also, it's director of photography is Larry Fong, who's most famous for working with Zack Snyder. Larry Fong is a brilliant director of photography. But let's talk a little bit about the story here. The story is the Predators come to Earth to hunt humans, except they have something new. There's something that makes them even better. And what is it? There's an even more giant Predator. That's it. That's literally it. Now,
that's the twist in the trailer, by the way. We're not giving anything away that's not literally in the trailer.
Yeah, no, that's in the trailer where they're like, oh my God, he's so giant. It's a giant predator. Oh my God, now he's going to kill us even more. And here's the thing about these franchises nowadays. They want to continually escalate, but the way they escalate is completely concrete. This is a completely concrete, simplistic way to escalate. How do we make the Predator more threatening? Oh, let's just make him bigger. That's not interesting. That's not cool. But it's still a Predator movie, so I'm still going to see it. Hug. Daniel?
I almost feel like I have to hug this after the atrocity of the past two films. But that being said, that would go against every fiber of my being, as they say. Especially as one who is tired of milking these brands. So tired of milking brands that I'm even tired of Star Wars. I'm not sure how that's possible, but it is. So, tackle.
Tackle.
William?
Yeah, I've watched this trailer, and I wanted to like it. I like the Predator movies, but it seems like it's just going to be just, I mean, it's going to be mindless action, which I don't mind, but do we really need another Predator movie? Like, why would I watch this new one when I can watch any of the other movies featuring a Predator? So I'm going to tackle.
Yeah, man. I even like Predator 2.
Oh, I thought we peaked at Alien versus Predator, but yeah.
Alien versus Predator was bad, but I still saw it.
So two of us have invoked the three tackle rule.
Oh, that's right.
So if you force me to watch one of these movies, I think Justin expects me to say The Predator, but I would have to say that I would watch The Hate U Give before I watch The Predator.
Why?
At least it's new.
It's new, okay. And you're interested in what would affect our culture?
Yeah. I mean, yes, but mostly because at least it's a new script and not a ringing out of a franchise.
Does it change anything if I tell you that that movie is based on a book?
Oh, God, it is?
Yes.
Jesus. There's nothing new in the world.
Just say The Predator and move on so we can move on.
The Predator, then.
Yes! William?
Yep, I would see The Predator.
That's right. Toxic masculinity for the win. And you know what The Predator does when he comes to our Earth? He oppresses us. I wonder what his oppressor score would be. We won't know that, but we will know ours, and you can know yours after we go into our final segment, Life on the Midside. This week we got a document from a Midsider. Won't say who, won't say how, or the context, but this document is entitled Identity and Power in the U.S., and there are five columns. From left to right, the columns are identity, privileged group, targeted slash erased slash vulnerable group, and then the final two are I am privileged or I am targeted slash erased slash vulnerable. So what you do is you read from left to right, and you decide which of those you fit into, and then at the end you tabulate your score to know if you're privileged or targeted slash erased slash vulnerable. So I thought it would be fun for all of us and you Midsiders out there to take this quiz together and find out our oppressor score. So send your results to us on social media. I'm sure we're going to find out here that I am the most privileged. I am the biggest oppressor on this show. But let's just start here.
It's pretty clear.
Any opening remarks from either of you two?
These golf rules, lower score is better.
Well, no, because it's you add up, right? You have to fall into this false dichotomy, bro. You're either privileged or erased every time. So what's ever higher of your two?
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So let's go. So the first one is race, and the privileged group is white, and the targeted slash erased slash vulnerable group is black, Latino, but it actually is like Latin and then the at symbol because it could be A or O, which, Daniel, as you pointed out, that assumes two genders, doesn't it?
That's bi gender right there.
Yeah.
Triggered already.
Asian.
This test is an oppressor.
Arab, indigenous, biracial, and multiracial. So, of course, I am privileged here.
Man, I'm going to own your asses on this quiz. I am. What's the difference between biracial and... Okay, so multiracial is more than two?
Yeah.
Couldn't you just put multi... Do you need biracial? Couldn't you just put multiracial? I feel like that's redundant. I guess I'm technically biracial. Unless you count multiple white races as being. But they don't because the privileged group is white, one single category, which is insane. So
yes, we've talked about that before, right? Like Italian and Polish, French, English, but I'm just white.
First row, I'm already oppressed.
Yeah, I always put other when I'm asked for my race, so I think I'm oppressed as well.
Wait, what? You're not white?
I never put white. I always put other.
And see what you put. What's white... true?
That's what's true. I don't think white is a race.
Fine.
Justin's the oppressor.
Class, upper class, upper middle class is the privileged group. And then the targeted race vulnerable group is working class, working poor, and poor. I have to say, I think in this one, I'm targeted race vulnerable. Do you guys agree with that assessment?
No, I think so.
Are we doing in the United States or worldwide?
Well, worldwide, yeah. We're all privileged.
We're all upper
class.
That's
what I mean.
Yeah. Exactly.
Also, isn't there a category missing? Ironically?
Shh. Middle class doesn't exist.
They have an upper middle class, by the way, but not a middle class.
I think they're calling working class middle class.
I mean, yeah, how can you right. be upper middle class and not have a middle class?
There's this huge movement. I'm there's privileged. A strike going on now in Silicon Valley. All the security guards, led by a young white guy that stopped being an engineer in order to become a security guard, trying to unionize all the security guards at like Facebook and Google and stuff like that. And I definitely could see him calling himself working class, but he'd never call himself middle class.
Well, I'm mid-side class, so. I'm privileged, whatever.
So we're all privileged?
William, you're privileged too. We all know it.
Yeah, who's keeping score here?
Keep your own score.
I'm keeping my own score.
All right.
I mean, I'm in whatever. How many categories are there? I'm all of them.
Next.
Ethnicity.
No, you're not that one.
No, you missed color.
Oh, color. Sorry.
Yeah, color.
Sorry. Sorry, I don't see color, so I missed the column. I missed the row because I don't see color.
Good joke.
The privileged group of color is light-skinned, and the targeted race vulnerable group is dark-skinned.
Wow.
All right. So I think for me, ever since I moved to California, I'm no longer light-skinned. So I'm definitely a targeted one. I get some serious. I'm more like red-skinned, and I don't think that's a.
Is red light or dark?
It's definitely darker than my natural tint, so I'm taking the targeted oppressed on that one.
Excellent. I'm light-skinned, unfortunately. As much as I'm Mexican, I'm light-skinned.
I was going to ask the same question of what if I have a tan or not? It changes. Like, Daniel, did you ever see me at Clemson where I sat outside all summer and had that really dark tan?
Yes.
I was like a different race, so I guess it depends on the amount of sun I get. I'm privileged, whatever. I love how this, anyone listening to this show who's never listened to it before is going to sound like the white guy is trying to not sound privileged this entire segment.
Yep.
All right, let's move this along.
Ethnicity.
A lot of categories to get through.
European American, EG, German American. When did we stop using EX and we started using EG? Anyway. Vulnerable group, we have here Latino with the at symbol again, Asian American, African American, Native American, etc. And then the EG is Filipino American. So not only am I privileged, but I am targeting, erasing, and making vulnerable my girlfriend, which makes our relationship dynamic really weird.
That is interesting. Again, I'm taking the targeted because I am not a dashed American. I'm just an American. So I'm taking the... I am targeted.
Your ethnicity is dash?
No, I don't have a dash.
So, oh, no dash.
They said
sorry.
European American. I'm just American, so I guess I'm on that targeted erased side.
That's true. I'm giving myself half a point in both. Since I have European heritage and I have Latino heritage.
Latin hat. Nationality.
That sounds like a Mexican Star Wars vehicle.
Nationality. Privileged group. U.S. born documented. Vulnerable group. Foreign born undocumented. Which I have a question for you, Daniel. Obviously, I'm privileged, but isn't your wife born foreign, but she's documented?
Yes.
So how does she fit into this?
Half and half. Half privilege.
Okay.
Yeah, yep. I'm taking the privilege on this. I'm definitely U.S. born and documented.
Wow, yeah, he took the privilege. Wow,
privilege.
Language.
This is like a woke Yahtzee.
English speaking is privileged. Non-English speaking, English speaker with foreign accent. So privileged.
I mean, I speak French. Does that count?
It doesn't say if it's your primary or not.
Nihongo o hanashimasu. So therefore, I'm not taking the privilege. I'm taking the oppressed here. I speak Japanese.
Biological sex. Male is the privilege. I'm just, every time I'm now, I'm just laughing at myself because I know what William's going to say. And the vulnerable group is female, comma, intersex. I don't, privileged.
This whole category is triggering, but I'm going with privileged.
Well, since for the show I identify as female, and I don't think we say that there is no such thing as biological sex, I'm taking the targeted erased on this one.
Gender, the privileged is cisgender man, and the targeted group is woman, transgender, genderqueer, and two-spirit.
Again, not nearly enough categories here, so, but I'm privileged.
Privileged as well.
I am taking the targeted vulnerable erased on this one.
No way. After that whole conversation earlier about your morning happy times.
Yeah. Well, for the show, I do identify as a woman. So
there you go.
Sexuality.
So hold on.
What?
We have biological sex, gender, and sexuality.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. There's
I feel like we're gilding
some horny
the
fuckers.
I feel like we're gilding the woke lily here. This is a little much for me.
That's too sexual for me. Triggered.
Well, imagine if you were born biologically a woman, but your gender is cisgender man, and then you were pansexual.
Just. Oh, my God. You won the woke Olympics. All right. What are the categories?
All right. Sexuality, we have privileged is heterosexuality, and oppressed or whatever is, I don't even, like, annoying complainer is lesbian, gay, bisexual, queer, pansexual, asexual.
All right.
So you guys are privileged on that. Yeah.
Or,
and I'm And I am, of course, taking targeted erased vulnerable on that one.
I love this next one because who decided this one? So age, adult is privileged, and then child, youth, elder is erased. When did this happen?
Yeah, because we pay no attention to children in this culture. They are totally oppressed.
I don't know, but I'm definitely taking targeted on this one as well because I've been gay dead now for 8 years. I'm 38, so I've been oppressed.
Does it matter if I'm young at heart?
I mean, we collect Funko Pops. Doesn't that count as being a child?
We're both privileged. We're both the bad one, whatever the bad one is.
Ability. Privileged is able-bodied with normative mental / cognitive abilities. By the way, I love to say normative and not like normal. Like, what's the difference between normative and normal? And then,
well, it means moral. You have a
one
moral.
Is moral.
One. Yeah.
Normative has a meaning. It means moral.
Okay. And so the erased group is with physical, mental, or cognitive disability. So I have a question here. And Williams, you seem to be the arbiter on this, so I'm going to ask you. They don't have height anywhere on here. So if you're short, are you still able-bodied?
There's other. Hold on. There's other down at the bottom. I think we can save height for the other down at the bottom.
Okay.
But you're missing the more important thing. We're only saying that I'm going to assume they met normal here. Able-bodied with normal mental cognitive abilities. Well, I don't have normal mental cognitive abilities. I have above average mental cognitive abilities. So I'm taking the targeted vulnerable on this one.
You're taking the fact that you're neuroatypical and using that to say you're oppressed?
Yep.
Fucking
X-Man. I'm
going
to win this game.
Yeah, I don't feel like I can award myself any points in either category for the same reason. See, this is like the Supreme Court where I agree with your outcome or your reasoning, but I have a different outcome, William. So, yeah.
All right. Well, I have low self-esteem, so I'm privileged.
Okay.
Size.
Privileged. Finally!
Thin and fit. And nobody likes you because you're fat and you need to lose weight is large, heavy, fat, and big boned.
Well, I'm choosing big boned if I get to choose. So.
Yeah, this is weird. I'm not thin, but I am fit. So rather than sit on the fence like Daniel, I'm going to take that I am privileged on this one in a controversial turn.
Wow. Well, we're all oppressed in the next one. Religion, Protestant, Christian, and Catholic is the privileged, which, I mean, what about like born-agains or what are they in the South? Daniel?
Southern Baptist.
Baptist, yeah, Southern Baptist.
Those are all Protestants.
Oh, okay.
Those are all Protestants.
All right. And then oppressed, we have Muslim, Jewish, Hindu, Yoruba, which I've never even heard of that before.
I never even heard of that.
It's Yoruba, Jamaica. Ooh, I want to take
Well, I'm double oppressed here because I like the Beach Boys very much. Atheist and et cetera. And I've never heard of the religion et cetera either.
Yeah, what other religions are there? Okay, whatever.
Yeah, no surprise here. I'm taking erased on this one. Because I'm not part of the Protestant, Christian, Catholic religion.
I don't talk to invisible men in the sky.
I would say, though, I think they might count your upbringing, really. So I was raised Catholic, so I think that would make me still an oppressor.
Ooh, interesting.
True, I was baptized Catholic,
yeah.
So that means I'm saved no matter what.
Right.
Nope, I'm still going with oppressed.
All right, education. Privileged, we have higher education. And non-privileged, we have high school or less.
Okay. Honestly, I don't feel like my education was a privilege, to be clear. I feel like, if anything, it slowed me down a little bit. If someone had just put a stack of books next to me and said, read these and you'll be educated, that would have been a privilege. Nonetheless, I'll go by the stupid false dichotomy of this quiz and choose privilege.
Yeah, I'm going to have to choose privilege on this one. I definitely have higher education. I too wonder about the fact that the majority of the schooling was paid for by me. I feel like I earned it, but I guess that's a
how
privilege.
Dare you?
Earning something is a privilege. Yeah,
you didn't build that because you drove on a government road to get to the school. Therefore, all of your achievements are belong to the government.
Damn it. And I'm still paying for it, too. I should have just sent the bill to the government.
That's right.
Income and source of income. Employed full-time is privileged. And unemployed, underemployed, receiving government assistance is erased or threatened or oppressed.
Full-time employment would be a vacation for me.
Yeah. You're taking the same point I was about to take. I work 45, 50 hours a week. And then I come home and work another 10, 15 hours a week at the minimum for the store. So I think that I'm going to take oppressed on this one. I also receive government assistance in the form of roads and SBA loan. So I think that counts as being oppressed.
Oh, that's funny.
So are you taking oppressed as well, Daniel?
No. I'm taking the quiz fairly normally.
Oh.
Normatively, okay. I should say. Sorry, normatively.
Normatively, how dare you?
Normatively. Yeah, so also I am privileged there as I work multiple jobs. Marital status. And ironically, the entire quiz erases an entire group of people here. So we have the privileged group is married and single young person. And the oppressed or erased or whatever group is divorced, separated, domestic partner, single older person. What about dating and in a committed relationship? Why is this not on here? That talk about being erased. Can I take...
Because you're in the middle class.
Yeah.
So can I take oppressed on this one?
Well, you're technically a single young person.
God damn it.
Yeah.
If you are not married, you are single.
I have to be consistent. I'm gay, dead, plus 8, so that means I'm not young.
And I don't understand,
single,
though.
So
I thought young people were the oppressed in the age category. But if you're a single young person, you're suddenly the oppressor?
Yeah, it seems like you would be better off. I mean, if you're happily married and you're young, it seems like you'd be a lot better off than if you were single. I'm confused by that, too. The quiz is not consistent, but I'm trying to answer consistently.
It is consistent. You are just fitting into these binary definitions. They can be unprivileged in one way and privileged in another. They're privileged in dating. because they have a better dating life because they're young and in shape and hip. I mean, it's not like, what if you're a single young fat person? You're not privileged in this case in marital status.
Only if you're white.
All right, let's get it over with.
All right, coming home here before we have the other, we have family structure, conventional nuclear family, and single parent, foster parent, grandparent, queer parent for the oppressed or erased group. And I have a question. What does conventional mean? Does that mean your family like loves each other like Full House? Or does that mean conventional is like you all yell at each other and hate each other? Because that makes a difference.
I thought it meant you all did cosplay at Comic-Con.
Wow, dad joke.
Took you a moment. Dad joke. Took you a moment.
Well, my initial thought was they all dressed up like the Incredibles.
Could be.
So, obviously, again, I'm privileged.
Yeah. Also, if your family is nuclear, does that mean it's radioactive?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm triggered by the word nuclear, but I am going to take privileged on this one.
All right. The word other is triggering. I feel like no one is an other. So. No one. Edward Said? No one? Okay.
Edward Said. Is that why Said in Lost is named Said?
Maybe.
Interesting. Okay. So in other, are we going to put height? Or do we not want to give me a... Do I get to keep a perfect score?
Are we also putting collects Funko Pops?
What about yes, Zack Snyder fan, no, Patriots fan? I mean, does those make me privileged or not privileged?
Does your sports team win? Privileged. Lose, unprivileged.
All right, so my oppressive score is ultimate.
Let's see. 11.5 privileged. And erased 4.5.
I think you missed one because it should add up to 17.
Yeah, I didn't participate in one.
Okay. I am privileged with 5 privileges. And I am erased by 12.
All right, so I will be editing out of this episode.
I have a net privilege score of -7 toward the privileged. So that's how privileged I am. That's my score. I've now officially checked my privilege.
Yeah,
and I'm fine.
I never have to check it again. Like a physical? Do you have to check it yearly, or is this just one time, once and done?
You want your privilege to become malignant.
I'm gonna.
So, Justin, what's your privilege score? 1,000.
Unless you're gonna add the atheist thing, but I think they would say that I was raised Catholic, so that counts. I got a perfect 17 out of 17.
Wow!
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Now stop oppressing me.
What do I get? Like, where's my money or some shit? Like. Hey,
you submit this to the government postcard-sized form, and Donald Trump will personally deliver you your privilege money.
God damn it. How am I alive? How has somebody not murdered me yet?
It's coming. Don't worry.
All right. Well, let's end this episode. What did we learn this week? Daniel?
I learned that Justin doesn't like it when I call audibles on the news.
Fucking Peyton Manning. Is that who you think you are? Stick
Omaha?
To the route trees.
Omaha.
William?
I learned that the best way to protect human rights is by not attending the UN Human Rights Council.
Amen, brother. Justin?
I learned that the reason I want to see the Predator is that I am the ultimate predator. When they were like, we have a giant predator, they actually just meant it's about me.
That's right. But it wouldn't be giant. If you learned something this week, especially if you learned what your oppressor score is, why don't you tweet at us and let us know, or Facebook us or whatever, Instagram us at The Midside. Snapchat is acceptable as well. So is Vero. Let us know what your overall oppressor score was. Also, I'm curious to know who you think would be good for the Supreme Court. And if one of you says Judge Napolitano, I'm going to spit. So don't do it, libertarians. But tweet at us at The Midside who would put on the Supreme Court. Yaron Brook is eligible. Don't have to be born in this country to be on the Supreme Court. You can go to themidside.com/podcast and listen to all the previous episodes of this show, including last week's stellar episode and the week before that stellar episode and all the stellar episodes going back all the way as far as we can. While you're there, go to the store section, pick up a shirt that has the classic logo design on it, or the Hail Snyder shirt, or the False Dichotomy Bro shirt, all the shirts. You can go to iTunes or Google Play and subscribe and get this podcast delivered to you the moment Justin hits publish on Midside Monday. You can also leave us a 5-star rating while you're there. That's awesome. 5 stars helps us become more privileged. Privileged in the iTunes world. That's awesome. If you don't want to do that, that's fine. You can go to patreon.com/themidside and give us some money if you'd like. That's helpful. We like money. We're privileged white people, apparently, except for William, the most oppressed man ever to appear on the show. You can choose to give us money based on every piece of content we produce. So that means if we take time off, you don't give us money, which is kind of cool. But also, we have Patreon-exclusive content. Right, Justin? Some of those are reviews of new movies. One was our first episode ever. That's got to be terrible. So you can go there and have also our related Discord channel, which allows for Patreon-exclusive chat. And then also not Patreon-exclusive chat. So anyone chat. Plebeian chat. Proletariat chat. All the normal chat. I'll get there someday, I promise. If you can't do any of that, that's fine. The one thing we rely on, though, for this show to grow in any meaningful way is for you to tell your friends about it. I don't know, smoke signals are a good way to tell your friends. Carrier pigeons, great way. Some people still do telegrams. That's kind of fun, right? Singing telegram, that's a good one.
I think a guy
in a gorilla suit.
I think Midsider Conrad is actually going to tell Jordan Peterson about our show. So,
yes, and we'd have him as a guest anytime. It would be very weird, but we would have him as a guest. So we thank you for listening and for telling a friend. We thank Liberty.me for syndicating us. And don't forget about the Ocon Midsider meetup on, when is it, Justin?
Tuesday, July 3rd at 8 p.m. in the lobby of the hotel. The hotel is the Fashion Island / Newport Beach Marriott.
Yeah, I'm going to only tease, not reveal, but there's going to be a bit of an activity there that you won't want to miss.
With a prize!
It's not an orgy, sorry, but it is an activity with a prize. You're not going to want to miss it. I won't be there, but
with
Justin
a prize
is going to do an awesome
of something,
job.
The prize is something that rhymes with dock. And again, not an orgy, even though the prize is something that rhymes with dock.
Oh, careful. We have a lot of gay Canadian listeners, so.
Oh, man.
Got a little heated here for a second. Anyway, until next week, I love you, but not in that way.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Emblesneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.
Did anyone hear River right after I said the outro? She yelled. She meowed.
She was like, please, God, feed me. We're starving to death.